This is the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and the leading producer of quality fertilizer products. The podcast is intended to facilitate the transfer of knowledge for farmers and crop advisors, improving farm profitability and environmental sustainability. With Yara, knowledge grows.
Hey, thanks for joining another edition of the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. We are with Dr. Steve Petrie. We're going to do another agronomic tip of the week, a short little nugget of gold that you can use to better your agronomic knowledge. We just completed all of our nutrient podcasts. If you haven't heard those, go back. We split them up into the primary nutrients, the macronutrients, and the secondary nutrients, and I think we got through all of those. So good gold nuggets there.
Also, in addition to the primary or the macronutrients and the secondary nutrients, we did the micronutrients as well.
That's right.
And I was going to say, there's a couple of things that we'll come back to in a future podcast, and these are some of the nutrients that are they are beneficial, mm-hmm. but they may not be essential. And there's some micronutrients. There's some nutrients like sodium, which mm-hmm. interestingly enough can be beneficial for some crops, although I don't believe it's absolutely essential for any crop. So we'll come back and talk about those in a future podcast.
And I will say that we had one of our listeners go to our website and make a comment about cobalt and brought up the whole idea of cobalt, which is one of those beneficial nutrients.
Yes, and we'll be sure to come back to that individual's question and deal with that during that appropriate podcast.
One of the common threads as we were talking about all of these nutrients was the necessity to take soil samples. And we thought that it might be a good idea to do a couple or maybe even three podcasts on how to get soil samples and what's the right way to do it. What are the things that you need to consider as you're getting those soil samples? And then how do you get good data and understand that data? So Steve, let's jump right into this. What do we need to know as we think, you know what, I need to take a soil sample. What do I need to know?
Sure. Well, the whole process of collecting a soil sample, submitting it to a laboratory, and getting the analytical results back from the laboratory, and then, in many cases, most cases, making a nutrient recommendation, really is a three-step process that I just listed. Sample collection, sample analysis, and then interpretation or recommendation from that sample. Now, that sequence and those words are based on the idea that we're using a soil test to predict how much fertilizer we may need to apply. Mm-hmm. There are other reasons to take soil samples as well, and we won't get into those a whole lot in this series of podcasts. We may have one about specifically about how to identify or diagnose soil disorders, but right now we're going to limit ourselves to a discussion about how to take soil sample and use that to develop or as part of our nutrient management planning process. And so the first step in that three-step process is the sample collection. And we'll focus this podcast on that process.
When is the best time to take a soil sample, Steve?
Well, the best time for most nutrients is as close to time of planting or plant growth as practical. Now, as practical becomes the key word there. And if we've got a very, very busy spring, if we're trying to seed early in the spring, the soils are wet and cold, it's difficult to get out in the fields and so forth, it may not be practical to take a sample in March if we're going to do an early spring seeding, for example, in the northern Great Plains. We may have to take a sample in the fall mm-hmm. to allow time to collect the sample, get it analyzed, and then develop a nutrient management plan based on the results from that laboratory analysis. But ideally, we would take it as close to planting or sowing, or in the case of a perennial crop, if we are using soil sampling, it would be in the spring when the crop is dormant, but just before it's going to break dormancy and begin to grow.
What do I need to do to take a soil sample? Just go out there in the field with a shovel and just randomize where I want to dig a, a whole?
Sure. Well, and you've touched on a very key point, and that is that the absolute need to collect a representative soil sample.
Mm-hmm.
And let me work through some math here. I'll use round numbers because I can do math in my head easier with round numbers. But suppose we have a 20-acre field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a large field in many situations. And in some, of course, it may be a large field. But if we're talking a dry land wheat field, it may be a section, 640 acres, and others may be less or larger. But let's just take 20 acres. And if we assume that a foot of soil, an acre in size, a foot deep, which is our sort of typical upper surface collection, that weighs 4 million pounds, an acre foot of soil, and it will vary a little bit depending on the bulk density and so forth. But let's, for round figures, we'll use 4 million pounds for an acre foot of soil.
Hmm.
So we have a 20-acre field. So the soil sample that we're going to collect and send to the laboratory is going to represent, in the example we're using here, 80 million pounds of soil.
Wow.
And we're going to develop a nutrient recommendation plan that may cost, depending on whether we're talking dry land wheat or an intensively produced vegetable crop or an almond or a fruit crop, the cost of the fertility program might be hundreds of dollars
mm-hmm.
per acre. Multiplied again by the 20 acres. So it could easily be in the thousands of dollars for that field. And so it's absolutely essential that we collect as representative a sample, as good a sample as we can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I want to spend some time talking about, is how do we collect that representative sample? But let's go a little further down this chain. So you're going to go out in the field and collect from 15 to 20 individual cores. And I say a core because in most cases, the preferred instrument to use or the preferred tool to collect a soil sample is a one-inch tube with a side cut out to have the sample be collected into a bucket. And you can use augers and so forth, but the soil probe is probably the most common one.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to go out and collect 15 to 20 samples. And we'll take the top foot of the soil. Now, I recognize that in some parts of the country, the typical soil sample, surface soil sample, is 0 to 6 inches. But in my experience and my work, I've focused on 0 to 12. And so I'm going to use that as my example. So we're going to have 20 samples of that 1 foot soil. And that we're going to put that into a bucket as we walk throughout our representative area or our area and collect our representative samples. We'll have 20 cores in a bucket. And that's going to weigh 4, 5, 6, 7 pounds, depends on the moisture content and it's, again, the bulk density and so forth. We're going to stir that up and mix it very so that we get we are not going to send that whole bucket of soil to the lab. We're only going to send a small portion of it. So we mix that up real well. Then we collect a much smaller sample and put that into the bag, which is actually submitted to the laboratory. Again, depending on the size of the bag, that may weigh a pound or two. So we've gone from 80 million pounds of soil in that 20-acre field down to 5 or 6 or 10 pounds in the bucket. We've gone down to a couple of pounds, and that gets sent off to the laboratory. And they're going to dry the sample. Usually overnight is sufficient to dry the samples. And then they're going to take a small subsample of that, which is actually analyzed. And the amount of sample they're going to utilize will vary depending on the test and so forth, but 10 to maybe 50 grams, a couple of tablespoons full of soil. So we started out with 80 million pounds of soil, and we end up with the equivalent of a couple of tablespoons full of soil that are actually analyzed. And that's what you as a farmer or a crop advisor are going to use to make a nutrient recommendation that represents, in many cases, thousands of dollars of investment and, of course, the time and effort to grow the entire crop. And so everything that we're going to talk about for the next podcast, the rest of this and the next ones in the future, are predicated on a good representative sample.
Steve, what if there is a large variability in soil types in that 20 acres, or you know that there is maybe some nutrient deficiencies in one area of that field that you've identified previously. How do you take that into consideration?
Scott, that is an excellent question. And that's one of the challenges that we face when I'm going to describe the ideal situation, of course, is we're going to collect a representative sample. We assume the field is relatively uniform. But that's not often the case. In many cases, we have distinct differences in soil texture, soil depth, ultimate productivity across an area. And so that presents a great conundrum for us. We ideally would recommend that each of those distinct areas within the field be sampled separately and then fertilized separately. Mm-hmm. And that's ideal. If we're talking a quarter section or even a section of a crop, it's unlikely that we're going to be able to collect every unique area within that large area, have it analyzed, and put on a separate fertility program. And so on one hand, yes, I would encourage you, the growers and the crop advisors, to take a sample which accurately can represent those distinct management areas within a field, recognizing that there's only X amount of hours in the day and time to take samples, and balancing those two becomes a challenge. Take an example where we have a field that may be 70% relatively uniformly the same and a 30% of the field is distinctly different. If at all possible, manage that 30% differently. If it's not practical, I would at least recommend that the grower or the crop advisor collect a sample to know what's out there. But keep that sample separate. Don't mix it with the other sample. Utilize the larger area of the field as the basis for the nutrient management, recognizing that if possible, you know, we've collected a sample from a separate area that's too small to manage separately. At least know what's there. Mm-hmm. Are the nutrients distinctly higher or lower? And do we need to, if possible, make some adjustments for that area? Ideally, of course, we would have a grid sampling and we'd use a variable rate fertilizer and so forth. That may not be practical or possible in our situation. So the more we can learn about that distinct management area and then modify our nutrient as appropriate and as possible to fit that. If we can't do that, then don't sample it because it'll confuse the bulk of the field. Use the bulk soil sample from the majority of the field and simply treat the field uniformly. Not ideal, maybe the most practical solution, however.
Okay. What about the frequency of these samples? Is it just good enough to do it in the springtime? Like you say, ideally, if you can do it in the springtime at planting to understand what deficiencies you have and then create a fertility program based on that? Or is there an advantage to do it periodically throughout the year and adjust that fertility program?
Sure. And the answer to that question depends on the crop we're growing and our ability to manage the nutrients and so forth. In terms of a sample collection, for mobile elements in the soil, and we're talking things like nitrogen, maybe boron, some of the other nutrients, which are both deficient and can also be toxic in the case of boron and some of the others. In those, we need an annual sample before planting to look at the nitrogen, because as that's taken up by the crop, additional nitrogen is applied perhaps in fertilizer or during the growing season. We have compost and manure and organic material, and nitrogen is much more complex. And we'll come back to that. In the case of nutrients like phosphorus and potassium, the cations, calcium and so forth, the micronutrients, zinc, manganese, so forth, things like calcium, we can measure those perhaps if we are looking to save some money. We could probably do those every third year and track trends over time, or every other year. And in those situations, we're looking for trends. Is the phosphorus level in the soil low, but we're using a good nutrient management program and the levels are increasing, and at some point they'll become adequate and we won't have to apply a buildup rate. We'll just have to apply a maintenance application rate. Same thing with potassium and some of these other nutrients. So in those cases, for those nutrients, every second year, every third year may be sufficient. But because nitrogen is so mobile and so responsive to changes in movement through the soil, we need to take those samples if we have data on how to use a soil sample to predict nitrogen response. We need to take those every year. So that's the first part of the question. The second part of your question was about during the growing season. Mm-hmm. And some crops in some places, we do have data that allows us to take a soil sample during the crop growth and use that to make additional or not make additional nitrogen applications, depending on the status of the soil nitrogen at that time. Pre-side dress nitrogen test for corn is a classic example of that. In some cases, people look at soil test levels of nitrogen for vegetable crops, and tomatoes are other examples. In some situations, they use mostly plant analysis rather than soil analysis for mid-season nutrient status. So it depends on whether we're talking, you know, corn in Iowa, tomatoes in the Central Valley in California, potatoes in the Pacific Northwest or in Prince Edward Island. They're all managed slightly differently, but you can certainly use mid-season soil sampling as part of the tools in the toolbox to help you predict if there's additional nutrients that are needed.
Okay. You know, this doesn't sound like rocket science to do the actual collection. Is there an advantage to have a lab or an advisor do this for you, or is it just as easy to go out and do it yourself and all you need is a 5-gallon bucket and a soil probe?
Well, let me give you a flippant answer. As somebody who's collected an awful lot of soil samples, yeah, if I could get somebody else to do it, I would. But actually, it's not. And the advantage of doing it, of having someone who knows the field collect the sample.
Yeah.
That can be the farmer or that could be the crop advisor who's worked with that farmer. That knowledge about the field, particularly the yield history within the field, if there's an area that's unusual in the field, it may not be evident to somebody that's just walking the field, sticking a probe in the ground, the way that it is to the grower that has a yield monitor or simply watches how the crop grows. And the need to sample, avoid those areas and so forth may not be obvious to somebody who's never been in the field before. And so that's the one advantage of it. But in actually taking the sample is fairly straightforward. Now, I mentioned a 0 to 12 inch, or in some cases we use a 0 to 6 inch for our basic nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. In some crops, particularly when we're looking for nitrogen, it's advantageous to take a deeper soil sample and look at the nitrogen that is below that surface soil sample. And the general recommendation would be to collect that sample to the rooting depth of the crop. Mm-hmm. So we're talking potatoes. Potatoes have almost all of their roots in the top 2 feet of the soil, maybe even as shallow as 18 inches. But if we did 2 feet, we would certainly find all of the nitrogen that those potatoes are going to see. We talk a crop like dry land winter wheat, and the rooting depth of that crop may be 4, 5, 6 feet till it hits a restrictive layer in the Pacific Northwest. And the fertilizer recommendations are based on soil sample collection to the rooting depth of the crop.
Wow.
Now, taking a 5 or 6 foot sample is quite a commitment. And I'm not, I wouldn't say that a lot of growers do it routinely. Uh-huh. When I ran the experiment station, we had a hydraulic sampler and we took soil samples to the depth of the crop. We were farming in a smaller area. We still took a large number of subsamples, but we used a hydraulic probe to get the samples. We weren't out there trying to push a sample, you know, a core 6 feet in the ground and pull it back out. That's why soil scientists all have bad backs, but that's a joke. But it is quite a process to take a deep sample. But for crops like that can root that deep, that gives us a good indication of how much nitrogen that crop is going to see.
Where could someone go if they're want to learn more about how to take a good soil sample, do we have any resources that you're aware of that we could point them in that direction?
Well, certainly there's a large pool of, you know, body of information that's available on Google. You can just go into Google soil sampling and be overwhelmed by the number of articles you can read and so forth. Generally, the universities and the regions or states have guidelines that are developed specifically for the crops in that area, and it's important to do that. And we'll get into this in the future podcast, but soil sampling is a good tool that we can use, but it's not an exact, you know, it's not a perfect tool. It's a good tool, or a very good tool that we can use, but it helps when you have to make sure that the recommendations we use are based on, if not local laboratories, at least laboratories using appropriate techniques. Different parts of the country use different techniques and so forth. And we'll talk about that more in some of the future podcasts. But you need to find out which your laboratory is, what they're using and so forth. And you can call up your lab, work with them, work with your crop advisor, or again, rely on the crop advisor to take the samples.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much. Today's podcast was on how to take a soil sample. Next week, we're going to talk about the lab analysis. Once you have that sample and you send it to the lab, who do you send it to? What do you tell them to what kind of analysis do you ask them to do, and what's available, and all that sort of stuff. So stay tuned to next week's podcast where we continue with soil sampling, more specifically on the lab analysis part.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. For more information about our company, please visit us at www.yara.com or yara.us, or for Canada, yaracanada.ca.